We are on page 136, 135 on the bottom pages, page 76 in the top number. In the Hebrew, it's about 10 lines from the bottom. The first one is Kamosh Kosov Lakam Baharichos. And in the English, it's the first paragraph on the right hand column.
Any one, yes.
Okay, we are talking about the idea of a person. Continuing to the idea mentioned in chapter 29 of a person considering himself to be disgusting in his eyes and having a broken heart, and the person could think maybe the reason why he's the way he is because he's a guy who sits on the corners all day and he's being tempted. And if it's not like, and we can't judge this person because if we're sitting in a base medrash all day. And then he said, and the last thing he said was, well, even the guy who is sitting on the corner is tempted. Basically deserves whatever he gets because he has no excuse whatsoever. And because he should have had, Hashem gave him the ability to control himself and he's not controlling himself.
Right.
Okay, and he has to do this and he, you know, this is going to affect his service to Hashem, etc. So he says, V'kol shalei hegiya lidei midas zula hilachem im gufa mochama atzuma kazu. Anybody who doesn't actually come up to wage this type of a war with their body, because what we really want is total dominance. Be'egiyas nefesh, be'egiyas baser, k'moshu b'ol ha'kamen, v'lo ye'egiya le'b'chinas ve'erech mochamas ha'yetzer ha'boyer ke'esh la'ahava li'hiyos nechne v'nishbar livnei pachet Hashem, and that he is not in any way, in any shape, way, or form, fighting a war against his yetzahar, which is burning like a flame, which is inflamed to be downcast and broken before because of the dread of Hashem that he has. Okay, so you have a person who says, listen, I do like to daven. I spend a lot of time davening over there, and I kind of like try to pay attention to what the words mean a little bit, and I think I'm trying to work on myself. And he says, this is not really the way it is. This is not the way it's that's not called a war. You can't slough through a war, you know. You know, it just, if he's not really putting any energy into it,
you can't really slough through wounds.
Yeah, exactly.
You typically die.
Right, exactly. You know, so
yeah.
So it says it has to be that this person. There must be, if a person is really davening properly, there has to be some sort of a trace in him, a trace of an effect,
right,
that he did something, so that when he's done davening, he still has
some
this
element.
Yes,
right,
the element.
Some element. Some element of change or effect.
Right.
This next one hurts.
Right. The came in your birchas of mazon. The kol birchas hananin. The misses the kavana.
Ow.
Okay. It's also when it comes to benching.
Yeah.
Okay. Benching. The way benching is composed is if you have just like a little bit of a basic understanding of Hebrew, you're gonna be able to understand what benching is all about. That was like the first thing when I realized, hey, you know what? I know what the words mean. Was benching, you know? It's just like, yeah. I got it, because you know what you're talking about, kind of, you're talking about thanking God for eating is what you're talking about.
Right,
so you get this word like achol all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, and hazanis ha'olam is like, zan is like mezainis. Everybody, who doesn't know, what bacher doesn't know what mezainis is, you know? So this also has to be, you know, you sort of knock off a benching.
Yeah, blow through it all the time.
Yeah, you know, you have a sandwich for lunch. You only have a certain amount of time. You eat your lunch. You kind of do what you got to do, and you realize, oh, I got to go back to work. You know, just like.
And when you're done, did I say that?
Yes, exactly. Okay.
That's so gross.
That's
so gross.
But you think about it, benching after bread is one of the 613 commandments.
Yeah, it's probably
it's on the same thing like putting on tefillin and saying the Shema, learning Torah, eating matzah on the first night of Passover.
Right,
it's more important than Shemoneh.
Actually,
right?
Because
Shemoneh is only the Rabbanim.
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, so benching, we just kind of like say, because you know, when do people learn benching? They learn benching when they're little kids and they sing the whole thing. So it just becomes one of those things. Oh yeah, benching.
Yeah, right.
But it's not an oh yeah benching. If you're looking at the words, you're thanking Hashem
for
sustaining the world and sustaining you and keeping things going and keeping the Jewish people going and doing all kinds of things for the Jewish people and taking care of the heresies and the heretics and the apostates and all that type of stuff. It's all in benching.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And he says, okay,
that's because you ate.
Well, that's exactly it. It's because animals eat.
Yeah. And are sustained.
Yeah.
And guess what? You're sustained.
You don't see animals sitting there making mazumans, you know.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Because they eat like animals. And a person who's not careful with benching is eating like an animal.
Exactly.
Okay, and it's the same thing with all the other mitzvahs, all the other brachas that we have to say. You're just about to throw an apple down your gullet, you know, so you knock off a quick bowl of Priya Eitz. At least you thought enough to thank in your mind, and so that you're saying the right bracha.
Yeah.
That much at all. But if you're thinking, what a person could think about in the Baruch Ata Hashem on the Kenim Malach HaElam, before every bracha, he could starve to death.
Yeah.
As to what there is to think about.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay.
Yeah. You know already.
Yeah. So the person should have some monochrome of kavana when he's saying that, at least this piece to thank Hashem for giving him this.
Yeah.
At least that should be his kavana if he's not going into all the deep Kabbalistic whatevers. And it says a person who eats something without saying a bracha is considered as having stolen property from the Beis HaMikdash.
Stole it.
Ouch. And how, if this is what's going to be with the bracha when you're putting on tefillin, what about the actual putting on tefillin?
Yeah.
A person should realize that they have tefillin on when they have tefillin on.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it before, declaring a moratorium of texting during davening, you know?
Oh, come
because
on.
One of the things with tefillin specifically is one of the kavanas of tefillin is that the brain rules over the heart. And here's this guy, he's got his tefillin on. And he's doing a thing with the thumbs going on over there. Yeah. Just a second, I'm in the middle of saying, Shema, get my thumbs going. No.
Oh,
where's brain ruling heart? It's a tremendous exercise to help get us through the day. As if a person could focus on his brain ruling his heart, at least for the time when he's davening chakras with his tefillin on, hopefully, when he really gets tempted, when he's out in the world, because there's not much temptation in shul, except for maybe the shot of whatever and a piece of herring after
or gripe about the current circumstances, whatever.
Right, okay, and you know, bad coffee that they make over there.
Yeah.
So but then when he's out in the real world and he's really thrown with temptation in his face, the first thing that shaded his mind is that, the brain rules the heart, of course.
Yes.
It should leave that effect the whole day.
Yeah.
If not the whole day, at least until Mincha, so that at Mincha he can regroup and refocus.
Right.
And at Mincha should at least take him until Ma'ariv.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, and it all basically starts on how did the person start the day? That's what the Rebbe went with the Moida Ani, that is the highest part of a person's day.
Yeah.
Okay? You're never going to be more awake than you are when you open your eyes and say, Moida Ani.
Yeah.
Okay? From there, you start getting tired.
That's right.
You know? So that's it. It's the whole day goes like that, and from there, it's downhill.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. V'kein be'inyan Isaac limud haTorah lilmud harbi yosim echafzav erit Sinai v'lefi teva omer galosai. And so it is when it comes to learning Torah, that he should learn a whole lot more than he normally wants and desires, according to his nature and his habit. Al yedei mechama etzuma gam im gufay. As this is part of the war, the awesome war with his body.
Right.
Like we said before in chapter 29 about people who would wait until noon to eat. Mm. Because a normal person ate at 10. But this guy would push it off to noon so that he could sit and study, even though he's going to study afterwards also. So it didn't matter if he ate from 10 to 10:30 or from 12 to 12:30. It's the same amount of time that's going to be devoted to eating. But like this, he could say, I'm going to do this in order to show that I'm in charge.
Right.
Rather than it's in charge of me.
Right.
The old eat to live instead of live to eat. If you learn just a little bit more than you normally do, so that's a small war. And it's not going to kill your Yetzirah. It's not going to do it. You know what? Hey, I got an extra 5 minutes. I'm going to learn 5 minutes. Yetzirah goes, what else you got to throw at me? That's no big deal. 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Fine. You know, I'll put up with it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But nothing more. This person is called a Rasha Gomer. Why is he called a Rasha Gomer? He said way back in chapter 11 that if a person did something wrong and he doesn't feel remorse for it, that is defined as a totally complete Rasha. Okay? Now, what does it mean that if we're talking about violating the will of Hashem, so Hashem doesn't want you talking in shul either. And how many people talk in shul and feel remorse over the fact that they talked in shul? So as long as a person doesn't feel remorse because he didn't think he did anything wrong, which is why he's doing it to begin with, so the Tanya says he's a complete Rasha. So you're thinking Rasha Gomer, you don't have to think chainsaw massacrist.
No.
Okay, that's an evil, sinister person.
Yes, it is.
A Rasha Gomer is somebody who did something wrong, and he didn't feel any remorse for it. He didn't want it because of not having feeling remorse for it means that he doesn't correct it. And he perpetuates the wrongdoing.
Yeah. Wow. Ouch.
Umali b'chinas sur meira, umali b'chinas asei tev, hakol hu mitzvah hamelech. Hakadosh, mitzvah hamelech, hakadosh yachid miyuchid baruch hu. And it doesn't make any difference if you're talking about not doing something wrong or doing something right. It's all the mitzvahs of the Melech, who is the Holy One, who is united and unique, or singular and unique, blessed be He.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and that's what you're going back to the thing, and so too with doing, how much more so with doing the mitzvah.
You know, I gotta wonder in the case of a Beinoni, which we're not, which I'm not.
Go ahead.
Qualify. I have to wonder if the turn away from evil isn't a bigger deal than to do good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because honestly,
the guy keeps Shabbos,
we enjoy the mitzvahs.
Yeah, the guy's keeping Shabbos and he's eating pork shalot. You know, something amiss over there.
Right. But we enjoy the mitzvahs, but the turn away from evil part, it's tough to schlep.
Yeah.
Joy out of it.
Oh yeah, that's why you have to do it first.
Exactly. Yeah, so I have to.
And but then it says you talk about it. Yeah. Is how does the person doing it? Where does it really count? Is if the person does it out of love of Hashem.
Yeah.
He realizes, you know what this did to me? This schlepped me away from my connection to God.
Right.
And I don't want to be disconnected from Hashem.
Right.
So his turning away from evil is just as an act out of expression of love of Hashem.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, so which one is more important? Well,
it's not a more important thing. I don't think it's a more important
thing. The first one, it says, the Pasuk clearly says, turn away from evil and do good.
And do good, yeah.
Okay,
one requires the other.
But turning away, you can do them simultaneously.
Yeah.
Okay, so, because, you know, there's the story with what's his name? Elazar ben Dodai. You may have heard this. You're familiar with Elazar ben Dodai? His goal in life was to transgress
every mitzvah. Man,
and he went to assault a woman, and she looked him in the eye and said, "You have no portion in the world to come."
Right.
And he hit him. It hit him, and he sat down on a tree, and he on a log, and he cried himself to death. A voice rang out and said that Elazar ben Dodai has a place in the world to come.
Right.
And Rabbi Yehuda said, "It's not fair. I'm working for my whole life what he got in 1 minute."
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a follow-up story, which I don't know if I told this story before. You can stop me if I did, because it's pretty long. I'm going to just do the main points. Is that there was a business person that lived in Liadi who had a very prodigious son,
and
he was a genius.
Yeah.
And some people came and said, "We'd like to take him back with us to learn in the yeshiva with us."
Oh,
remember such a story?
Yeah. And
okay.
They were masculine, and they converted him, and
they got him away from
it. He came back, he wrote the Sefer.
Right, and he wanted to prove the author Rebbe wrong.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Who was he? He was Elazar ben Dodai.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so we did tell this story before.
Yeah.
Okay, because what had happened is okay, he did the turn away from evil.
Right.
As soon as he cried himself to death,
right.
He had no more evil. He had completely turned away from it.
Right.
But he hadn't done anything good yet.
Right.
So they said, "We can't let you in until you do something good."
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So. So what the first step is, I mean, it says in Pirkei Avos, "Inein yira ein chochma, inein chochma ein yira."
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to have the lower level of fear, which is an awe and a reverence, a respect of Hashem.
Right.
And then you can go sit and learn Torah.
Yeah.
And then now, once you're sitting and learning Torah, it'll teach you how to have a proper love and fear of Hashem.
Right. Yeah.
The Kain b'shar mitzvahs of a prophet divrei shebamamayin, and so it is with all other mitzvahs, and specifically things involving with money. K'mayi avodas tzedakah ki hai gavna. Okay, that a person should feel a sense of I'm doing a mitzvah. It's very easy just to throw a quarter in a pushkin and keep going. He says later on in chapter 47 that the idea of from this week's parsha, Parsha's Truma, says Vayichali Truma, take from me Truma.
Truma, right?
Okay, which the literal translation is take me Truma. Okay,
right.
Take me Truma is the same thing like an expression of call me a cab. Okay, you're a cab. Okay, it should say take me. An offering. Not take me as an offering. Is
right.
what it is.
Right.
It's take me an offering.
Right.
Okay. Or take an offering for me.
For me. Right.
Take an offering
right.
for me. Is
right.
that the me becomes the object of the noun, the action, instead of becoming the the thing itself, the noun.
The action. Right.
Okay. So the. Because why is when a person is giving tzedakah, it's not that they have a quarter in their hand and they're throwing it into a pushka.
Mm.
This is a mitzvah. They are grabbing elokus and putting it into the pushka. Because the mitzvah, that's what happens when a person is in mitzvah, is they're connected to Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a person should feel, I'm doing this mitzvah, and it's more than just a quarter in the pushka.
Mm.
It's I am taking Hashem. And indeed, with every mitzvah, a person becomes a host to Hashem.
Okay.
We said that last week. And when it comes to turning away from evil, we're talking about being masters of accounts, and it's talking about thinking about all the thoughts that he thought and from that weren't for the sake of Hashem. He said if a person was really a master of account, they would come up to the conclusion, I never did anything wrong. The only conclusion you could make from that conclusion is that you didn't make a proper account to begin
with. Exactly. Check your books again.
Yes, exactly. There's an error in there someplace.
Check the books.
Yes. Go through it again.
Actually, open the cover.
not investigated by Wade.
Yeah, yeah. But Makam Shatarach al-Molchama atzuma ve'erech anal. And maybe he'll find, okay, he didn't do anything wrong. He's not a chainsaw massacrist. But maybe he just hit the jelly bean jar once too many. He didn't like say, you know, I don't need any jelly beans. And right. Every time he passed by that jelly bean jar, he just like put his hand in there and took a couple out. Yeah. You know, didn't do it like a pig, just a couple here and there.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. But he could have stopped himself and said, you know, I really don't need to be eating these jelly beans.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Vafilu pachos me'erech hanal kegoin lahasig ve'emsa sicha noa. Okay. But come. Sarech lil mochama asuma me'erech hanal. He has to have a great war, even if it's a little bit less. For example, to stop talking in the middle of some joke.
Yeah.
Oh, sefer begadnas chanera, or a good piece of gossip.
Right.
Okay. I feel a genai cut and the kalma eat. Even if it's just a little thing wrong.
Right.
Okay, this is that a person not to tell a joke, okay, he's going to say, you know what, I'm not going to tell the joke.
Yeah.
But if he's in the middle of the joke and he says, you know what, forget it, I'm not telling you the joke.
Yeah.
Because why do people tell jokes?
To get attention.
Exactly. They want people to laugh at what they're saying and thinking how clever and wonderful this person is.
Right.
Now, there are instances where jokes would be warranted.
Right.
Okay, and that you have to come to the conclusion.
To break the ice, to
come to the conclusion
of yourself, right.
Exactly, you know, so if you're dealing with a sick person, making them laugh is probably a bigger mitzvah than anything's going to be.
Oh, sure, of course.
You know, that kind of stuff. So you tell a joke.
Yeah, that's a different.
Okay, Rava used to tell a joke in order to get the connection to the students, that they should be able to focus on his lecture, right. So we tell a joke.
Yeah, it's for the sake of others, it's one thing.
Yeah. Okay. So that a person would stop himself and say, you know what? If I tell this is really very funny what I have to say. Yeah. And if I say it, so people are going to turn to me and they're going to look at me and say, oh, that was a good one, what a great joke, et cetera, et cetera. But if I don't do that, if I close my mouth, I won't have any of that.
Mm.
But it'll make Hashem happier.
Mm.
Okay. So we're not, however, I have to warn people, I always warn people on this line. Is we are not telling people not to have a sense of humor.
Nah,
we're telling people
to think about it.
To think about it first as to what's the motivation behind it.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. That's right.
I'm an incorrigible one-liner person.
Yeah, me too.
When someone will be in the middle of a conversation, someone will say, I'm just going to one-line
the
guy.
Yeah, me too.
And
it's really bad.
And at one point, I don't remember what it was, the situation of Remo Lipskier just turned to me like in the middle of a class where I had just done a one-liner and said, can you please stop doing that?
Ooh!
Ow!
Ooh!
Ow! And I came back with a one-liner, something like, well, I certainly could try now, couldn't I? something like that. You know, just, you know, came back with the one line.
Yeah.
And Rabbi Vichten did not appreciate it at all. It be known, you do not say jokes in my class. You want to sit in my class, you do not say jokes. You know, so, but I'm still, did I learn? No, I never learned. I'm still, you know, if something comes into my mind and I think it's funny and people are going to do it, you know, so.
Yeah, I hear you.
To the point of being irritating, yes.
Yes, I understand, yeah.
Okay, and then and then it gets worse when I say something people don't get it. Then it's like really bad. Like, okay, I went to all the trouble to come up with this really ethereal one-liner that really is very clever, and you're not even smart enough to see the cleverness in it and laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Years ago when I was young, I was always very, felt inadequate and intimidated by everything. And so I was made fun of a lot. So I finally figured out, you know, if I turned the tables and I made fun first, it took their thunder away.
Uh-huh.
And it got to the point where, you know, hey, you know, it was comfortable for me to do this.
Uh-huh.
So it developed into this whole attitude, you know.
Right.
So it's taken a long time to
get away from that.
Try to break away from that some.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm still doing the one-liners this evening. So I'm in a place, and there's a sign-in book.
Yeah.
Okay, so I sign my name in, and I say, hello, a lady behind me. It was a young woman, and I tell her, have a nice evening, you know. So and I'm walking out, and I grab the pen. She said, can you sign out, please? Okay, so I take the pen, and I say to her, this book says sign-in book. Where's the sign-out book?
Indeed.
And she just kind of like, just went right past her. She said, no, there's a column over there, you know. Yeah, just like,
okay. It's like, I know. I do it myself.
So okay, but filo genai cut into kalma. Even if it's just some sort of like a little bit of gossip.
Yeah.
A very little bit of gossip.
Yeah.
Ashuhu emes, and it's even better when it's true.
That makes it work. Yes.
Filo kedelenakas asme kenaida, and even if it's just to exonerate himself.
Right.
As it's known, Mahad Amar Rabbi Shimon Lo Aviv Rabbein HaKadosh Lav Ana Kasve El Yehuda Chayte Kasve. There was a story over there that's brought in the Gemara where Rabbi Yehuda is looking at a mezuzah, I think it was, and he says, this is really beautiful writing. Who wrote this? So Rabbi Shimon, his son, said, I didn't write it. Rabbi Yehuda the tailor wrote it. And what was the response of his father? Amalei kilach malashin hara. So Rabbi Yehuda told Rabbi Shimon, you should refrain from speaking lashin hara. Because what is it, the way that he said it, he says, first of all, Rabbi Yehuda, no one should have told him. He said, this is beautiful writing. Okay, who wrote it? Maybe that was already opening up the the door for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the answer should have been Rabbi Yehuda. Finished.
Yeah. Okay.
To say I didn't write it implies what's the matter? You know, it's not good enough for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It brings a question.
That type of a thing.
The
classic example of Avak Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
Is that it says you should refrain from it. I think it brings it in a little later.
Mm-hmm.
Is somebody comes and knocks on the door and says, have you got fire? Back in the old days, before matches and whatnot, it was a big deal to get a fire going from nothing.
Sure, of course.
So you always had some sort of a fire going.
Right.
And if your fire went out, so you went next door and said, you got any fire?
Right.
Okay.
Coals from the neighbor.
So this guy knocks on a guy's door and he says, have you got any fire?
Yeah.
So he says, I don't. Go to that guy across the street. He's always baking. So the line, he's always baking, what does that mean? Why are you telling me this? Is he always having parties?
Right.
Is that why he's always baking?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How come he didn't invite me to any of the parties? Yeah, a louse.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Is he always baking because he needs extra income? Maybe the guy's not doing well? I thought he was a such and such, and here it is. Maybe he's not such a great investment banker. You know what? I'm not going to put my money with him. If he's got to bake in order to make ends meet, I'm not going to invest my money with him.
Right.
So just from like an innocuous statement such as, he's always baking, it says don't
be a plethora of problems.
Don't open your mouth.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But a person wants to.
Yeah.
And Lashon Hara happens to be one of those things that just happens to fall out of a person's mouth.
Yeah, so there's so much, we have so much need, we're fragile enough that we feel like we have such a need to justify everything.
Right.
And so, and hence all the lines, all the statements, all the things.
Yeah.
And most of the time, the truth is, we don't need to justify.
No.
You know, most often we don't.
Right. And it's so don't talk necessarily good about someone, because you're going to talk good about somebody and someone's going to say, that louse? Okay, so what just happened over here?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, better not. I tell people, don't talk about other people.
It happened the other day. I
other people.
Somebody mentioned somebody, and I thought, guy's a really great guy. And I glanced and noticed the expression of the person. I thought, oops.
Right.
Stop there. Yeah. Anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Just oops.
I and Shamba Gamara Reish Perik Yud of Avavasa. Go look over there. Viki Hagamna Kama Mile de Shechiche Tuva. And there are many instances of such a thing. Ubeprat beinyan lekadosh atzmei b'mutarlei. Specifically, it talks about sanctifying oneself in that which is permitted to them. Shuhum ederaisa. That is a Torah injunction. That's a commandment. It's a mitzvah. Controlling yourself. In case it says kemosha kosher kedoshim tiyu v'his kadishtim, as it says, you shall be holy and make yourselves holy. And what does make yourself holy mean? Making yourself holy means removing yourself from the mundane.
Right.
And how does one remove themselves from the mundane? Isn't necessarily to take a vow of silence and go sit off in a mountain someplace. That doesn't do anything. That's not a war against the Yetzer Hara. That's called a retreat.
Exactly.
You're running away.
Just running, right. Yeah.
Okay, it says you have to make yourself holy by separating yourself from the mundane,
right,
in such a way that you're using it for Hashem. Right. Then what happens is it's not mundane anymore, now it's holy.
Yeah, correct, yeah. Ooh, yeah, that is, yeah.
Yeah. My daughter, who's in Israel, last summer, did some sort of a something where it was in the hills up opposite the Dead Sea.
Okay.
I suppose you'd call that the Judean Hills, but I think of Judean Hills as being north of Jerusalem, not, you know, to the west of the Dead Sea. But anyway, so she's on this mountain, and she's not allowed to talk for 10 days. They take care of all of her needs. They give her everything. They'll tell her, this is what you're going to eat. Don't ask her anything else, because you can't ask her anything.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll give you enough to live on.
Right.
And you're going to be by yourself, and it's going to be just you, and you're not allowed to talk.
Really?
Yeah, it's called like you have these like cleanses that people do, like to clean out their colons
and whatnot,
to flush their livers.
Yeah.
So this was a cleansing of the mouth and mind, etc. So she said it was all very existentialist. And you start, when you're left with nothing but your thoughts, you know. My response to her was a line I heard a long time ago, is treat your mind like a bad neighborhood, never go into it alone. So.
Indeed, yeah.
So anyway, let's finish up. And also, of sanctifying oneself being careful in the performance of the rabbinic commandments, which are more severe than the words of Torah. And how is it that some rabbinic enactment is more severe, more stringent than the words of the Torah?
The biblical defense.
Is because the Torah itself said, you will listen to the rabbis with more authority than you do than listen to the precepts in the Torah.
Right.
So one of the precepts is that you have to give more credence to rabbinic decrees.
Yeah.
All things we've been talking about are all these sins that people just trample on them, which is the line that Rashi uses in the portion of Akev.
Yeah.
And we talked about it before. The guy who talks in shul. The person might not even be aware of it, because if it's such a minor infraction, and if a person does it often enough, they don't even realize that they're doing an infraction.
Right.
Okay? Right. And it talks about that. That's the way that the Yetzer Hara really gets a person going. Have them do something and just have them keep on repeating it.
Yeah, to the point where it's, what's wrong?
Where it doesn't say, what's wrong? Because you have the Jews, when they first came into this country in the late 1800s, early 1900s, says they had to go to work. So this is the first time they went to work on Shabbos. So says they cried. The second time they went to work on Shabbos, they felt bad. Yeah. The third time they were doing a mitzvah of feeding their family.
Right. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect example. I witnessed this last week. A gentleman walked over to another couple guys who were talking during Torah reading. You know, he said, and he said, you shouldn't talk. He said, we always talk.
Right.
He said, so that doesn't mean you should talk. He said, I would go to hell anyway.
Right.
Perfect. Yes. Okay. Just put your head down and keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Aval be'emes im hu yedei sefer. If the guy really knows his stuff. U'machzik b'teiras Hashem v'karavas elokim yachbas. Excuse me. And he really desires the Tzohar of Hashem and the Cleave to Hashem. Gadol avayna minasaya v'ashamta gedoyla mikaflayim mikaflayim. So his sin is too great to bear, and the resultant of it is doubled and redoubled. Kamasha einin... Bimasha ain't a nilcham misgaver al yetzer. So a guy who has should knows better and understands the ramifications of not following after his yetzahara, and he follows after his yetzahara, for him it's much worse.
Yeah,
because he knows better.
Right.
When it talks to. Because these are sins. He doesn't even call them sins. He calls them these are like guilt.
Yeah.
The word Asham. It's like he's, you know.
Yeah.
As his guilt in English.
Yeah, then the guilt.
Yeah.
Of the most worthless of worth.
Yeah. Of I want to say low life, because that's what it means. We're talking Jews.
Yeah.
Miyesh Rikranis, the people who are sitting on the corners.
Right.
Harachakim Mahashem v'tarase, they're far away from a Torah and Hashem. V'ein ashamta ashmasin gedele kalkach, b'mashe ein akevshim yitzram haber ke'esh. Lahava. The fact that this guy can't control himself, so he's not going to be held responsible because he doesn't know.
Yeah.
And Judaism, if you don't know,
yeah,
you're not responsible for
right.
it.
Right, right.
Does that mean he's going to get shlishi for it? No.
No.
What will most likely happen is he'll be back again. Next lifetime.
Yeah. Ouch.
Because he now has to have this burning, flaming heart with a dread of Hashem, because he understands and he sees all the because of his awe of Hashem, who understands and is looking at all of his deeds. And like the guilt of all of the things which would bring him close to the Torah and of Hashem and His service, Gabi Acher, the Torah talks about, the Talmud talks about Acher, who was one of Rabbi Meir's teachers, a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That he was engaged in Kabbalistic studies with Rabbi Akiva, and with two other gentlemen. One other gentleman died, and one went off, and one went crazy.
Right.
And Rabbi Akiva was okay because he was a BT. Anyway, so so you have like Acher, for example. Okay. Who knew? I forgot what it was I wanted to talk about. I got sidetracked. Let me go back. Meshamas kalsher b'kalam yeshu kranes harachakim ma'ashem v'tarosa ve'ein ashmas and gadol kalkach. Oh, so yeah. So you have a person, he knows better. Which is worse? A person who doesn't know and does something wrong, a person who knows
of course,
and goes and does something wrong. So a Talmud Chacham, who's not putting himself into it, he should know. That he has to be fighting a war against his Yetzirah.
Correct.
And if he doesn't, and he's following after his heart's desires, even though he's sitting and learning, or is a Rosh Yeshiva, one of these things, so, you know, I'm spending lots of time, inordinate time.
There you go.
Of spending Torah and studying and all this, but, you know, the guy's a compulsive eater, for example. Okay, so he's not, it's worse. Because he knows that he should be controlling himself.
Right.
And he's not. Yeah. Okay. And he knows that Hashem is looking at all of his deeds.
Right.
Yeah, come on, Rizal Gabi Acher. Like we see by Acher, she yedek b'chovedi. He knew the glory of Hashem and still rebelled.
Yeah.
Well, Hem Rizal al Amal Ha'arish is venus in the lasso kishkagoy. So that's why our sages say the ignorant person who does tshuva, so his intentional sins become like unintentional sins.
Right.
Whereas a person who knows a little bit better and is realizing that because he did something wrong, he's driven himself away from Hashem, and now uses that as a springboard to get closer to Hashem, so that then becomes the vehicle for getting actually closer to Hashem is the Avera, and he gets to go on a higher level to be
Very good. Thank you.